This week on Future of Sex.
When we first met, before we got engaged, I used to turn him on. He still turns me on. And we used to have sex all the time, like 3 or 4 times a day. And as soon as we got engaged, he started treating me like his wife and the mother of his kids, and like he didn't want to have sex with me.
What are you trying to do to turn him on? You do a lot of stuff.
Hi, Oprah. I'm Tanya.
I'm Tim.
We have a great marriage, Oprah. It's just one problem. My husband wants to have sex 4 times a day. That's crazy. 4 times a day. In the bedroom, in the bathroom, in the kitchen, wherever. Tim will come up to me and ask me for sex, and I'll say, no, there's no way. I'm too tired. Then he'll give me this sad little puppy dog look.
Men are under a lot of pressure to want sex all the time when maybe they just want to roll over and go to sleep.
Hey, I'm Bryony, and welcome to Future of Sex, the podcast that explores the evolving worlds of sex and tech. This season is brought to you by our friends at WeVibe, who make some of the best couples toys, and right now they're having a sale. And if you use the code FUTUREOFSEX, you'll get an extra 20% off all their sale items. So head to their website, WeVibe.com, for some fun. And today we're going to be exploring a topic that is on most couples' minds, but it's a difficult one to bring up: sex drive. But before we get started, I just want to remind you this podcast contains explicit language and adult themes. So pop your headphones in if there are little ones around. Is your sex drive the same as your partner's? Chances are you've probably got mismatched libidos. It's pretty common. Perhaps you're the one that's horny all the time and your partner can never get in the mood, or vice versa. Well, stick with me. We're going to get to the bottom of all your libido issues.
I just felt like I didn't have the same drive, I guess. I decided to talk to my OBGYN about it. She didn't really take it seriously. She thought that it was understandable because I had a husband, 2 kids. I'm working all the time. She thought, you're just exhausted. It was just a non-issue. I was frustrated. Is it that I don't need it, or there's nothing to offer?
At first, I just thought sex is something you're supposed to do, right? That's what a healthy relationship is. You have sex. You make your partner happy. Your partner makes you happy. And I wanted to make him happy. It was like a chore for me. And I'm laughing about it, but we really haven't had sex in, I don't even know how long. It's been at least 6 months.
Maybe you relate to some of those women's stories. They're part of a series by Unblush to get more women talking about low libido. Sex drive and having low sexual desire can be really embarrassing and shameful. But it doesn't have to be. You're about to hear some practical tips on how to amp up your sexual desire, whether you're in a years-long relationship and the sex has petered out, or maybe you're in a new relationship and you're trying to deal with one of you wanting sex more and the other partner feeling hounded for sex, or worried about disappointing the other partner, feeling like something's wrong with them. On this episode, I talk to friends of the show, Dr. Brittany Blair, a clinical psychologist who is board certified in both sleep and sexual medicine. And she's a co-founder and chief science officer of Lover, an app for sexual wellness. As well as talking to author and celebrated sex therapist Ian Kerner and sex educator and founder of Sexpert Consultants, Reba the Diva. Each of them shared some very practical tips on how to get your groove back if you feel like it's missing, or ways to get more sex in a relationship if you feel like you're getting rejected. And this episode isn't just for couples. I'm exploring what it's like to lose your sex drive when you're single. Like, why is it you can go for months without wanting any sex? And of course, it wouldn't be Future of Sex if we didn't explore the technology side of this. Is there any sex tech out there that can impact our sex drive? Keep listening to find out. First of all, how does libido even work? Joining us right now is Dr. Brittany Blair.
So when we think about libido, we're thinking about sexual desire, right? And so we think about, what is desire? Desire is the wanting of something. And we can kind of think about libido as wanting sexual contact, either with oneself during solo sex or with a partner.
you know, not only does libido fluctuate across the lifespan and fluctuate based on our the partner that we're with, based on the context of our lives, libido fluctuates around the day span. So you may wake up and have, you know, some libido or some desire for sexual contact. And then by the afternoon, you have none. So really, it fluctuates massively by the minute, by the day, and certainly by the week, month, and year, depending on the context. The biggest impactor of libido is stress. So stress zaps libido for 85% of people. And I think we could argue that right now, most of us are very, very stressed out. So when people come to see me, they're, you know, got little kids and hectic jobs and financial stressors, and they're complaining that they have no sexual desire. The very first thing I'm thinking about is how much stress is on their plate. How much personal time do they have for themselves? How much quality time do they have with their partner? And thinking about all of those factors, the stress-related factors that impact libido. And then, of course, lots of other things impact libido, including relationship conflict.
I'm interested in those stories we heard before of women who don't want sex as much as their partner. And I want to dig into that gender difference just a bit more. I understand low sex drive is caused by a range of factors, but surely there's a reason why that "not now, honey, I've got a headache" excuse appears in so many movies and comedy sketches and news. Like, makes headlines like this.
Well, this is a big talker online right now. A husband giving his wife an Excel spreadsheet tracking how often and the reasons why she turned him down for sex. The wife posting this list to Reddit for the whole world to see. Among the excuses he tracked, "I'm sweaty and gross, you're too drunk, and I'm watching my show.
One of the biggest things that impacts women's libido is it's not that women have low sexual desire. They have low sexual desire for the sex that they're having. So just barely over 60% of women are regularly climaxing during a sexual encounter. And while orgasm isn't everything, you know, orgasm is definitely important. And in fact, roughly 82% of people report that a satisfactory sex life is crucial to relationship satisfaction. So when we think about women's libido in particular, and this applies to men to some degree as well, it's if you're not consistently having an orgasm, or you're having not the sex that you want to be having, then your desire for it obviously is going to be impacted.
Crappy sex means you won't really want to keep having it.
You're not interested. Yeah.
Yeah.
The other thing people, I think would be helpful for people to understand is that for women more than men, the desire for spontaneous sex basically disappears 6 months to a year into a relationship. For men, into a monogamous relationship. For men, that can last up to 2 years. What happens for women, for all people really, but it happens sooner for women, is that spontaneous desire, that lusty, "I can't wait to rip my partner's clothes off" feeling, turns into responsive desire. So instead of having that like, "Oh, I can't wait to see them, I can't wait to take their clothes off," it's like, "Huh, you're hanging out with them. Maybe you start making out. Maybe your partner is giving you a bit of a massage or caressing you." And then you start to feel responsive desire, this feeling like, "Huh, I wouldn't mind if this continued and translated into an erotic connection of some type that one would enjoy." And I think this is one of the biggest mistakes that people, or one of the biggest myths, I guess, is that I think low libido is actually much less common. I think spontaneous desire is the issue, spontaneous turning into responsive desire. So we don't want you to wait until you want the sex. You want to get started with your turn on activities, right? Or your what I call foreplay, not foreplay, and see if that leads to increased desire for sexual contact with your partner.
Okay, sidebar here. That kind of gradual response Dr. Blair is talking about, responsive desire, that's a concept that was championed relatively recently by Beverly Whipple and Dr. Rosemary Besson, a clinical sex therapist. Both of these women published diagrams of this new model of sexual response in 1997 and 2001, respectively. So, yeah, pretty recent. The models emphasize the many factors that help us get in the mood and directly challenge the old guard, or the OGs of sex research, Masters and Johnson from the 1960s. Masters and Johnson saw a linear model where with sex there was a start, middle, and finish line. First came desire for sex, then came stimulation and arousal, then a short plateau, and finally orgasm and resolution. But the responsive desire model, the recent one, it's a circular diagram, which shows how sex is cyclical. Desire often comes in response to something else, like a touch or an erotic conversation. It doesn't just, boom, appear out of nowhere. And what I found interesting about this research, particularly by Dr. Basson, was it recognized people in long-term relationships often take a while to get warmed up. Although the sex is consensual, many partners are interested in slowly initiating sex. They don't feel physical, sensual desire until there's some sufficient, like, pleasant erotic talking, cuddling, touching, or even fantasizing that's underway. As Dr. Blair said, core play, because foreplay really is that core to the sex, especially when you've been together for a while. But what's interesting here is the media took this as something that was especially common to women, where Dr. Basson argues, even to this day, that responsive desire is as common in women as it is in men. I asked Dr. Blair to tell me more about the male side of desire.
Our culture is constantly talking about sex, sex, sex. We should want it all the time. And this is one of the most damaging myths I think that men have to hold, is that men are wanting, ready, and able 24/7. And the God-honest truth is they're not. Again, I see just as many men who are presenting with distress over their low libido as I do women. So, and I think men are under a lot of pressure to, people are under a lot of pressure as it relates to sex, but I think men are under a lot of pressure to want sex all the time when maybe they just want to roll over and go to sleep. This is probably the most common question I'm asked, is how many times per week should we be having sex? And the answer is tricky, because my general recommendation is to prioritize, but not pressure. So notice pressure is the least sexy thing ever. And so feeling pressured to have sex is a guaranteed, what we call a desire blocker. However, it is a really important thing to prioritize. So I generally recommend couples have erotic contact once every 72 hours. That does not mean swinging from the rafters sex. That also doesn't mean intercourse. Erotic contact could mean just touching your partner in a way that you would not touch a friend of yours, right? It could mean taking a shower, a sensual shower together. It could mean sleeping naked and holding each other before bed with an agreement that you're not going to engage in any other sexual activity than that. It could be spending some time making out. So I generally, or it could also mean masturbation. I often recommend to couples, at the end of a long day, maybe you don't feel like 30 minutes of going after it, and maybe masturbating together, or maybe one person who's kind of feeling in the mood and the other isn't, the in the mood partner masturbates while the other partner's holding them, or you masturbate separately. So I think that we need to expand our idea of what sex and the erotic is. And I do think we need to prioritize it. And I generally recommend every 72 hours.
Aren't we all like that, really? I mean, you talk about sex drive, and implicit in that is high sex drive is great, fun, yeah, you're having a wonderful life. Low sex drive, sorry, Linda, is kind of sad.
But it all depends on what's going on in your life.
Exactly,
well, doesn't
exactly.
It?
That's what I was going to say. It's not a constant thing. You can be at stages in your life, you're on holiday, everything's going well, everyone in your family's doing okay and fine, and okay, so you've got room in your head. But if you've got other things going on in your life that a lot of people have, whether it's with their kids or parents or stresses or money or whatever.
Or just food.
Well, maybe it's just me.
Sometimes I just would rather eat more.
Food! It would be the last thing on my mind.
Ian Kerner is the New York Times best-selling author of numerous books, including She Comes First, which is also the best-selling sex advice book of the last decade. Ian's also a licensed psychotherapist and nationally recognized sexuality counselor who specializes in sex therapy and couples therapy. And I was lucky enough to be one of Ian's students a few years ago when I first started the podcast, and I learned so much from him. His new book is due out next year, called So Tell Me About the Last Time You Had Sex, And in the book, he aims to help readers gain a deeper understanding of what turns them on so they can communicate better with their partners. So who better to give a call than Ian and ask for his advice on couples with low libido?
So libido is incredibly variable. I think it's a lot like the stock market. It goes up, down, and there isn't any one factor driving it. It's kind of an aggregate of a number of factors.
What are some practical ways couples that perhaps have mismatched sex drives or, you know, libido, how do you talk to them about this? Or, you know, I imagine some people feel shame if they don't want sex as much as their partner do or don't have that appetite for it.
Yeah, well, you know, when two erotic energy is coming together and isn't always aligned, you know, there's, you know, it makes things doubly interesting. And I do work with couples very often on mismatched libidos, sex ruts or desire discrepancies. I think one of the key factors is the willingness to work on it. I mean, yesterday I was working with a couple and my sense was that one partner had a lot of libido and interest in working on the desire discrepancy, acknowledged that it existed for a number of reasons, but with the other partner, I wasn't so sure of their willingness to work on it. So the main thing about working on a desire discrepancy is not actually one's level of desire. It's one's level of willingness to work on cultivating the arousal or cultivating the connection that will lead to the emergence of desire. So in another way of thinking about it is some of the language that gets used around spontaneous desire versus responsive desire. When there's a desire discrepancy, sex is clearly not happening spontaneously between two people, maybe in the way that it used to. So you're actually in a different kind of desire framework. And it's not about showing up with desire again. It's about showing up with the willingness to try and engender desire.
That's a good one to think of, because I think sometimes practical tips can be more around just have sex. Just have more of it, and then suddenly, you know, it'll come back. And I've definitely read articles like that that are, you know, for women that are going through menopause, like, well, just, you know, use it or lose it. What do you think about that?
You know, Brian, that doesn't really work because, first of all, if you're in a sex rut or a desire discrepancy, there's kind of an emotional dance happening between a pursuer often and a withdrawer. And, you know, it makes almost any sexual event or overture, you know, a little more fraught. The thing is, the reason a lot of people also lose interest in sex is because of the mediocrity or the quality or the lack of quality of the sex itself. So just telling somebody to go out and have sex, you know, you may be asking someone to go participate in something that they're really not motivated to participate in, not because they don't have some kind of sexual motivation that they can't tap, but because the sex itself is so unmotivating. So I would never just tell somebody to go have sex. Again, you know, the title of my new book is called So Tell Me About the Last Time You Had Sex. And in it, one of the first things I look at is how does desire get launched? You know, what is the dance between two people in which they're able to sort of have a sexual call to action? So I would look to sort of rebuild what we call the sex script, or the way two people engage sexually, the behaviors, the emotions they engage in. I would look to rebuild that incrementally. So I would never just tell somebody, go have sex. Rather, I'd look at some incremental unit that they're both willing to engage in that kind of gets the ball rolling.
Whenever I find that folks are having a hard time with libido, I challenge them to take orgasm off the table.
Picking up right where Ian left off, that's Reba the Diva, sex educator of the famed Blow His Mind oral sex workshop in DC and CEO of Sexpert Consultants. She helps individuals and couples get the sex they want.
So if you take orgasm off the table, then your goal is just pleasure. right? Yeah. And pleasure doesn't necessarily have to be in your genitals. It can be the neck massage that you need because your shoulders are up to your ears every day with stress, right? Or that back massage or the booty massage. That's my favorite. I love a good booty rub. Right? It not only like helps my brain, but it helps my body relax. And I know sometimes turns into a yes because I'm like, oh, wow, I was really stressed out and this really helped me relax. And now I do actually want sex.
Reba's goal is helping you find out exactly what you want. How well do you know yourself? Are you ready to do something really practical? I invited Reba the Diva to shed a little more light on a practice she does called pleasure mapping.
Before you start to like Google and like find incompatibility solutions, right? See if you can't set the mood for relaxation for your brains to both relax before you start, you know, writing it up to, well, we're just mismatched. Because that's one thing I get a lot is, my partner and I are mismatched. My libido is high and my partner's libido is low, or vice versa. And then we do a workshop and we find out, actually, no, your partner would love a 3-day long lovemaking session. So pleasure mapping is knowing your own personal preferences and then mapping those out onto what they would look like in an experience with your partner, with your current partner. Right. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times people don't sit down and say, okay, anal sex, do you like that? Yes. No. Do you want to give it? Do you want to receive it? Yes. No. Okay. And so that's what we do in our workshops, right? We sit our couples down, you have a worksheet in front of you, you fill it out like you're in grade school, you switch papers, and then you look like it's a lot of fun, but it's also, you know, uncharted territory for a lot of folks. So it can be somewhat uncomfortable. Okay.
How do you get people comfortable with doing that?
It's important to have conversations about sex outside of the bedroom, right? Because inside of the bedroom, it's going to, if you guys disagree, now no one's getting sex. The mood is ruined. And why are we here, right? Mm-hmm. What we do in the workshops is we're able to facilitate a safer space. I'm not saying it's completely safe because there are some feelings that come up, right? Mm-hmm. But we're able to, as a third unbiased party, right? We're able to help facilitate the conversation. I think the biggest problem is like people don't know where to begin. Like I have so many sexual expectations and preferences and wants and needs, and I don't even know how to begin to have that conversation with my partner. And with the workshop, it's literally structured conversation. You know, you figure out what you want, and then we structure the conversation for you both to be able to safely and visually say, hey, this is what my ideal experience looks like. And it helps foster a sense of curiosity and play, right? Mm-hmm. Because once you build your pleasure maps, then it's up to each other. You know, you're giving the map to the pilot, which is your partner, and now they have to read it and they have to like what your pleasure looks like. And so that's a fun way to begin the conversation, because typically out of frustration, we're like, oh, I don't like it when you do this, or can you please not do that thing again? And like, that is not a safe container to have this conversation. And so that's what we do. We create a safe container for these conversations.
Okay, so if you're feeling ready to do some pleasure mapping at home by yourself and you can't get to Reba's workshop, here's two suggestions for you right now. For the digital nerds, just go to the App Store and download the Lover app. It will take you through this discovery quiz to figure out your own sexual profile. The app helps you explore your turn-ons, and it helps you understand how to prime your desire pump, especially if you've got low libido or if your partner does. The journey that you go through on this app is so personalized. It's just for you. And if you want to go old style pens and paper analog, you can try downloading an I want, I will, I won't checklist. You can do this with your partner. It's super easy. Google it, or That Sex Chick also has a list there you can download. If you just Google I want, I will, I won't, you'll see there's a long list of different things that you check off that you may want to try sexually or you definitely don't. And then you swap that with your partner. Now, I'm going to give you a little bit more insight from Reba on how you even broach this conversation of desire with your partner.
So I think there's two things that need to happen, right? One, you've got to decide for yourself, what's your boundary? What's your deal breaker, right? If you're the one with the high libido, like, how often do you need to be intimate with your partner? And does that have to be sex? Can it be some other kind of together intimacy that doesn't involve sexual feelings, right? Mm. Because physical intimacy is not the same as sexual intimacy all the time, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So that thing, then if you're the person with the low libido, then maybe it's like, okay, well, what is my boundary? Like, how often am I willing to have sex with my partner? How often does my body want to do this, right? Know your boundaries before you come into the conversation. And then to bring it up, right, I like to use a compliment sandwich. So you sandwich the uncomfortable thing in between two compliments, right? Mm-hmm. Like, babe, I love being intimate with you. I love our intimate experiences. They make me feel so loved and so safe. I just wish we did it more. Like, maybe two or three times a week would be great, because I just love what you do. I love it when you do that thing with your tongue on the back of my ear. It's my favorite thing, and I just want to experience it more. Boom, compliment sandwich.
This season of Future of Sex is brought to you by our friends at WeVibe. And when it comes to couples vibrators, there's really no other company I recommend than WeVibe. They've been called a game changer in heterosex for a reason. They consistently bring innovation to sex toys, and they're always just pushing the boundaries of what's possible with the technology to make sure you have the best sex. So, the good news is they're having a sale right now, and you're going to get an extra 20% off when you use the code FUTUREOFSEX. Just head to their website, WeVibe.com, and enjoy yourself.
By wanting to have sex with my husband all the time, he feels really good.
Of course he does. It's awesome.
He's always like, oh my God, like, she's always wants to have sex with me. Like, I never don't want to have sex with him, ever.
Wow, I really do envy that.
He says no to me more than I say no to him.
Yeah, and how...
And I'm not like a sex addict, though. Like, I'm not... That sounds kind of crazy to say, but I don't need like a 10 times. I just need it once a day, like a coffee. Do you know what I mean? Like, I just...
Once a day.
I could happily have it once a day. Two times I'm like, I don't have time for that shit, you know, but like,
you've
once a day.
11 years.
Yeah.
This is like amazing to me.
But we just fit together. I was just like, it's 11 o'clock at night. If you want to have sex with me, could we have done it an hour ago? Just because like he gets it in his mind that he wants to have sex like at midnight.
Oh,
and I'm
too
like,
late.
It's too late.
Yeah.
It's too late. I have like my sweet spot, like 10:30.
Yeah, right. So yeah. 10:30. Yeah. Most nights. Cause I
like 10:30 till 10:35.
Yeah.
Of the hundreds and hundreds of couples that I've worked with, I have literally never met a couple, I have never worked with a couple that had the exact same level of desire all the time throughout the course of their relationship. Mm. So there is always, and I think it's safe to say always, desire discrepancy that a couple is going to have to navigate. I have worked with many couples at the beginning of their relationship, the female partner had more sexual desire that waned over time, or maybe she had more sexual desire and then the kids showed up and her desire plummeted through the floorboard, which is very common. And her male partner's, I'm just speaking heterosexist for a second here, and her male mm-hmm. partner's libido went through the roof, right? So, so desire discrepancy is an inevitability in every relationship. And I generally say there are four healthy ways to respond to your partner's bid for sexual contact. There is so much risk for relationship wounding and harm when one couple bids for sexual contact and is rejected by their partner. The partner that's rejected feels rejected and maybe neglected and maybe sexually frustrated. And the partner doing the rejecting, doing the not interested, gets frustrated. Why are you making this all about you? It has nothing to do with you being undesirable. I'm just tired, or I'm stressed, or I'm just really not into it. So I usually will give couples four like secrets of communication to navigate desire discrepancy. So when your partner bids for sexual contact, you can either say, heck yeah, let's go. Can't wait. You know, I'm really into it. You can say, I'm not really feeling sexual at the moment, but I'm willing to start playing, making out, doing whatever that playful, sexual, erotic touch, something like that feels like for you, to see if you get in the mood, right? This is that responsive desire that we're speaking of. You could also say the third appropriate response would be, I'm really just not feeling sexual right now. But I will circle back to you within 24 hours and I will initiate sex in the next 24 to 48 hours. And then the last healthy way of responding to your partner's bid for sexual contact would be, you know, I'm not feeling sexual at all right now, but I would love to hold you while you pleasure yourself, or I would love to pleasure you. What it is, what kind of sexual pleasure would you enjoy? So those are the four healthy responses to a partner's bid for sexual contact. And I think these are really important in order to avoid the pitfalls that couples fall into when one partner is feeling rejected or the other partner is feeling constantly hounded for sexual contact.
I want to pick up on something you mentioned before, just in passing, about you recommend women masturbate daily to help them improve their desire. But for men, that can actually be harmful to their sexual health. Can you talk a little bit on that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I recommend for everybody during masturbation that they vary their routine. So one of the most common things that causes orgasmic difficulty in women and delayed ejaculation in men is they have a very, very specific type of masturbation routine. So either, you know, and sex toys are fabulous. And I recommend that you vary your sex toys and you have different things that you're using, right? So your body learns many different pathways to pleasure for both men and women. For women, the importance of daily masturbation, like I was saying, is it helps you learn and train your body to experience pleasure in a number of ways. For men, the reason I recommend being cautious is as men age, so roughly over the age of 28, I recommend not ejaculating more than roughly every 72 hours. And the reason is during your aging, well, you know, as you age, sensitivity is decreased and it can take more stimulation to orgasm. So for men, by waiting every 72 hours, they're more likely to be able to orgasm and ejaculate, and their orgasm is going to be more intense. There's also some correlation between frequency of masturbation and erectile dysfunction. And then finally, for many men, they're masturbating while looking at porn. And while I'm very pro porn is a great tool. If you're using porn too frequently, it can significantly impact your sexual health. So we're seeing men under 40, 30% of men under 40, 33% actually, are presenting to clinic with a significant sexual dysfunction. Prior to online streaming porn, that number was 3%.
Wow.
So this is a very, very big jump in men who are having significant sexual dysfunction. So I recommend not more than every 72 hours ejaculating and being very, very, porn is great, but be very cautious about using it too frequently during masturbation. So for men and women, I recommend varying your routine as broadly as possible.
I love that. What are some other practices or things that someone might incorporate in their week to help with this, you know, low libido?
Yeah, but one of the things I always recommend, and I swear to God, I get the most pushback, is actually scheduling time to be erotic with one another, whether we call that date time or sexy time. I talk about, you know, thrusting Thursdays and feisty Fridays and whatever it is that you can make playful and light, that you both know that that is your day to connect erotically. People talk to me about this is not spontaneous and it's not sexy and romantic. And I always fire back that when we're initially dating someone in the very first few months of dating, every single time we see them, we're scheduling sex because it's going to happen at the end of the date, right? So you go on your second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, 10th date, you're taking a shower, you're shaving, you're putting on your cologne or your perfume, you're dressing sexy, you're not putting on your, you know, Thursday underwear that's like got holes in it. You're really making an effort to prepare your mind and body for an erotic connection with your new partner. And we stop doing this over time. And this is a real problem. And so by saying we're going to have, you know, masturbating Mondays or thrusting Thursday or whatever it is, sexy Saturday, whatever it may be, or savoring Sunday, we actually look forward to that time. And we begin to anticipate the pleasure and the erotic connection with our partner. We may send our partner a sexy text that morning, like, I'm excited for this or that later on in the day. We're more likely to have erotic thoughts. and less likely to have the invasion of the stress push all of the erotic out of our mind. So I think scheduling time to be erotic with one's partner is one of the best things you can get in the habit of doing. And again, you know, if you have Feisty Friday and it gets to be Friday and you don't feel well or you ate too much or whatever, then it's perfectly fine to respond to your partner in one of the four ways that I mentioned about healthy ways to respond to a sexual initiation or a sexual invite by your partner. But then really saying, you know, honoring that within 24 to 48 hours, you're going to circle back to that. The other little tip I always recommend, and this is from Dan Savage, and that I'm sure you've heard, Bryony, is like, always sex before you go out. If you're going to go out on a date.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I think we chatted about this one time, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. Someone told me this.
Yeah. Great. Having sex before you go out. So before you've had those three glasses of wine or two glasses of wine and your belly is full of whatever Indian food and you're tired, you know, you're feeling less sexy, going out with that post-orgasmic glow can be quite nice with your kind of grinning at each other all night about the sex you just had previous. And then if you want to have sex after that fun date, that's okay too.
And now we come to the technology side of the podcast. It wouldn't be Future of Sex if we didn't explore how technology could help us understand or improve our sex drive. And there's one company in the sex tech space that I'm super excited about because I think they're going to make a huge impact on our sex lives. I've been hinting at it all throughout this podcast, so you should know by now that they're called Lover. And they have distilled decades of sex therapy and scientific research into this one app. They create personalized treatment plans. You go through the different steps and figure out what your sexual personality is. And then if you're struggling with your orgasms, your erections, or in this case, your libido, you'll get a special plan of activities and education at really a fraction of the cost of traditional therapy. And we've been very lucky to have Dr. Blair on the podcast today, who is also the Chief Science Officer and co-founder of Lover, to really help us understand how that sex tech works and how it can really help us understand our sex drive.
And we're going to talk a little bit today also about some sex tech that you're involved in with Lover. So you've had this amazing journey from, you know, research and school and going in couples and relationship therapy and now taking that into the future with Lover.
Yeah. So in 2018, I met Yash and Nick, my co-founders, and what they wanted to do is they wanted to capture what we do in the therapy room in a digital platform. There are roughly 900 of us that are board certified in the United States in the area of sexual health. And if you think about one in every two women and roughly one in every 3.5 men have a distressing sexual complaint, we have a very, very, very high demand for support and very low supply of doctors. And so what they wanted to do is try to help meet this demand on a digital platform. And, you know, mainly because there are not enough clinicians. And then also because for people to come in and see a doctor about their about their sexual health, it can be both embarrassing, it can be expensive. And so our goal was to create a product that people could use in the privacy of their own home that would really help solve sexual problems and optimize sexual health. So that's how we founded Lover. And yeah, it's been fun ever since then, kind of working on the product. There are a lot of interesting tools in Lover. One of them is your sexual profiling tool. We've developed a tool similar to your Myers-Briggs for personality. And this profiling tool asks you a number of questions. I think there are 40 different questions that hang on different domains that are related to sex and sexuality. Things like wanting to be adventurous versus needing to feel more comfortable and wanting to be open to new experiences or interested in novelty or interested in the familiar and the ritual. So we ask a bunch of different questions that hang on these different domains. And then the output is your sexual profile or your Lover type. That Lover type can then be used to help facilitate connection with yourself, your sexual connection, help you learn to kind of smooth out your growing edges, you know, kind of lean into discomfort, which we all need to do if we want to optimize our sexual health. And that Lover profile can also help you connect with a partner. So if you figure out what your partner's Lover profile is, you can talk with him about or her about your Lover profile and then figure out what are the best intersections with which to connect erotically. So that's one tool in the app. And then we also ask a number of questions about sexual health. So there are different journeys that are customized to each individual or couple for that matter. We have journeys that are designed to help you climax more consistently if you're female identified and going through the app and struggling with having consistent orgasm. We have journeys from all people, individuals for low desire. So this is what we've been talking about this podcast. So how what are strategies that you can use, practical strategies to really amp up your sexual desire. So we have sexual desire module or journey. We have journeys for people who've never had experienced an orgasm. And how do you get to know your body and what are ways that you can stimulate your body to kind of optimize your sexual pleasure? And then we have journeys for people with penises, for erectile dysfunction, for involuntary ejaculation. So for people who feel like they're ejaculating too quickly and would like to last longer in bed. And then finally, for people who are not ejaculating, they're taking too long to ejaculate and would like to learn how to sooner. So those are the different journeys that we have. We also have journeys for couples who are just feeling kind of bored, and they want to get curious. They want to expand their sexual repertoire. Maybe they want to optimize their sexual health. Like things are okay, but they really want to see what else they can experience, what other pleasure they can experience. So that's another model that we have for individuals and couples that want to be curious about sex, but don't necessarily have a sexual problem they're trying to solve. I think sex often and thinking about one's own sexual health or sex in relationship to a partner, if there is discrepant desire, I think it can have a lot of shame and sadness attached. And so my hope is that for listeners to really understand that they're not alone, that there are answers out there. There's very effective treatments available, both in digital platform through Lover or through an actual clinician that's there to help. So if there's pain around not only sexual pain, but if there's emotional pain or relationship pain around the area of sex and sexuality, don't suffer. You're not alone. Lots of people experience this and there is support that you can get. And I would really encourage people to check out Lover or to actually seek out a sex positive clinician if they feel like they need support.
This podcast was produced by David Lamb and myself, and this episode was edited and produced by Chad Michael Snavely and the team at Sound On, Sound Off. To hear more of their work, visit chadmichael.com. And if you have any questions or feedback, just want to keep up with what I'm doing, follow us at Future of Sex. I'll see you next week.